So there's, as I say, there's this perfect storm of conditions where basically I'm the go-to digital nomad guy. I'm your man in Tokyo if you're a digital nomad.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers. Or no trousers at all.
So, hello ladies, gentlemen, and hobos. This is the Hobo CEO Podcast. Nico.
Yes, Chris.
Where are you today?
I just arrived back in Chiang Mai. I left the cold, dark, cloudy Germany. It feels pretty awesome, pretty lightweight to be back in Sunnyland.
Whoa, I'm getting jealous.
Yeah, it's really nice. I didn't even expect it that much. Very relaxing. And we had a pretty easy time setting up again. You know, we're kind of familiar with the place. And it was intentional to go for something very non-complicated so we can basically spend less time worrying about stuff and just enjoying our time here.
Nice. Well, I'll be poodling over soon to join you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes. Well, Tokyo's nice. We've got a beautiful sunset right now. And although it's a bit cold, actually Japan's quite nice in the winter, or at least the Tokyo area. It's very sunny every day. I like it. Like it more than Europe anyway. So, Hobo CEO Podcast. A small little bit of news. I was interviewed on the Love Affair Travel Podcast. If you fire up our Twitter feed, you can see a link there. It's not like we tweet that much, so it's not far down on our recent tweets. But today, we're having a very special interview where you interview me. Isn't that right, Nico?
Yeah, I just realized the last couple of times that we talked that you've been always busy with people visiting Tokyo. And since that accumulated over the last couple of months, I realized that you really put yourself in a nice spot, you know, getting back, building your base in Tokyo. And a lot of people coming through and everybody seems to get in touch with you. Everybody seems to eager to see you and, you know, use you maybe as a tour guide and introduce you to the secrets of the city that you know so pretty well. So I thought I have a lot of questions about that and we should let everybody listen to the answers.
Indeed. So today I'm spilling the secrets on being a hobo in Tokyo. So let's poodle over to that interview.
Chris, every time we talked in the last couple of months since you went back to Tokyo, you had people over, you were busy, people visiting Tokyo, and I kind of realized you really put yourself in a nice spot. How actually did it come to you being the magnet of interesting people in Japan?
You make it sound like somehow it's deliberate or it's more to do with me than just like the random chance of me being in Tokyo and it kind of coming to me. I don't know. I don't want to put myself down. I'm sure that people do want to see me. But I think there's this kind of perfect storm of conditions right now with my situation and being in Tokyo. A lot of the people I know, a lot of the kind of entrepreneur, traveling entrepreneur types are passing through Tokyo. You know, it's a classic transfer from Asia to America. And very few people like myself in Tokyo. There's a, you know, there's a small startup scene, there's a few entrepreneurs, but it's, you know, the price of the city is above the normal kind of cheapo Southeast Asia bar.
Definitely. Basically. That's exactly what I was thinking. So wait a second. When did you move back to Tokyo in 2014, that was, right?
Yeah, so quick little bit of background. I was actually living here long-term for 2006 to 2010. So I was at about 4 years constantly here. Then from 2011 till the end of 2013, I was hoboing around, you know, no more than a few months in any city. At kind of the end of 2013, I decided to spend more of my time in Japan. And so basically the beginning of 2014 was preparation. And since August 2014, I don't think I've left Japan. I think I've been here for a good 5 solid months. And yeah, so that's the background. And I'll continue to stay here. I'll be here for most, you know, say 9 months out of every 12 months.
That already raises a couple of interesting questions, because since you're, let's say, semi-permanently move back, build your base station in Japan, especially in Tokyo, specifically, what kind of things do you need to consider? I remember you had quite some hassle getting the right kind of visa and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so the basics, I think most developed countries have a 3-month visa on arrival. Some countries can extend that 3 months to 6 months. So you can do like a solid 6 months living here based just on a tourist visa. Or if you couldn't, if you're one of the countries that gets the 3 month but not the 6 months, then you can stay here for 3, leave for 3, come back for 3, leave for 3, come back for 3. In theory, I've not tested that, but that's the basic immigration rules for tourists.
Do you have all that kind of information just in your head, or is there like a single resource where you people listening could, if they're interested, could find out more about this?
I shall put this on Tokyo Cheapo, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have written a bit about exactly. visas, but we'll do. I'll do a proper write up so we can link to it in the show notes.
That would be awesome.
And I've got some other resources we can link to.
It's a bit technical, you know, for the podcast, but I think there are some people who are lighting up and thinking, "Whoa!" So yeah, we should definitely put a reference in the show notes.
Yeah, I'm actually a resident here, so I've got a working visa in Japan. So I'll just do a little 1 minute overview of that. So
please.
Yeah, obviously to stay here longer term, you need a different visa status. In a nutshell, basically you can do an educational one. You can come here as a student, but that means you really have to be a student and you have to study. They'll be quite strict on your attendance. You do have to actually turn up to your classes, otherwise you'll get booted out. It's not like Thailand or something. For a developed country, it seems to me that Japan is actually quite an easy place to get a visa. If you tried to get a working visa in like America or Germany or England, not from one of the Schengen countries or whatever, you know, it's quite hard work. But for Japan, you know, it's pretty easy to get a job here as an English teacher, which will give you a humanities visa or a teaching visa. And my situation where I actually have a company here and I'm an employee of my company, that wasn't too tricky either. I mean, it was a little bit of a pain in the ass. But, you know, compared to doing the same in Europe or America, it was very easy. Also, the entrepreneur status visa is relatively easy as well. You know, you're talking about like a $50,000 investment versus the, I think it's like $250,000 or $500,000 in America. So basically, you can get a teaching job here. If you're an entrepreneur and you have your own business and it's existed overseas for, say you've got a British company that's existed for at least a year or a German company that's existed at least for a year, you could probably get a visa here as a representative of your company in Japan. And the basic costs and logistics would be working with a lawyer. It probably cost you about up to about 2,000 euros for that. Maybe less, maybe 1,000. It cost me 1,000 this time. You'd need to have some sort of proof of an office, which, again, I don't know, you can get offices fairly cheap here, probably like minimum of $300 a month. So you've got a company, that's checkbox one. You can drop, you know, 2 grand euros or dollars on a lawyer. And checkbox three, you can afford to rent an office for like $300 a month. If you can check those three boxes, then it seems pretty likely to me that you could create yourself a job in Japan and get a visa.
Okay. But because of all the hoboing around that you did after your first period in Japan, I mean, you meet a lot of people. We have the podcast, so some people contact us because of that. It just seemed that over the course of the last few months, a lot of people came through Tokyo and they dropped by. So you had a lot of dinners and what kind of encounters? How would you describe people coming in and what kind of activities did you get involved in?
It's been a great source of free dinners. Yeah, that's been one of the little hidden upsides is I've kind of had all these people pass through And basically, you know, what invariably happens is I'll end up kind of showing them a bit of Tokyo because I know the city really well. And everyone always ends up buying me like meals and drinks and stuff, which, you know, is a nice little perk. But
sure.
A big source of people passing through is definitely the Dynamite Circle, the DC, because, you know, there's a lot of people going from Asia to America there. There's a Tokyo group on the DC, so, you know, everyone kind of knows that I'm here. But then there's, you know, there's people like Chris Dame, who we had on the podcast briefly. He, you know, he came through Tokyo and we hung out. Peter Shankman, he was passing through Tokyo, said, is anyone here? Come and have dinner. So, you know, I was the only one here. That's one of the nice things is because there's not many people like me, it's quite easy for me to hang out with people I, you know, probably wouldn't get such easy access to if I was in New York or, you know, San Francisco or something. There's just so few people here.
And it also seems that, I mean, I haven't been to Tokyo, to be clear about that. And neither have I been to Japan. And I think there are two main factors, at least from my perspective, which are there's a certain language barrier and there's also a cultural mystery or it seems to me Japanese culture might be a little bit less accessible. So people are definitely looking for, you know, a point of contact, something, someone where they can... you know, ask some basic questions, maybe get some tips, which probably also is why Tokyo Cheapo is a good kind of project for foreigners coming to a country like and a city like Tokyo.
Yeah, totally. It's actually a real kind of win-win. It's nice for me having a fairly kind of constant inflow of new and interesting people, and it's nice for them to have a you know, a local guide, because as you say, Tokyo, Japan is quite a mystery. It's very culturally different. There's a big language barrier. It does really kind of help when you first turn up here to have somebody on the ground.
And Chris, I've seen you type Japanese. Obviously, you can speak Japanese. How fluent, would you estimate your own level of skill in Japanese?
I'm not quite there with business Japanese, which is quite tricky because there's all this formality and etiquette. But like day to day speaking to people, I'm pretty good at now. If I'm like kind of one to one with a friend, I'm fairly good at expressing myself, kind of close to fluency, I'd say. I forget how you measure these things, but you know, I've been here for 5 years and I can almost read newspapers. I can at least kind of read my internet banking and letters from the bank, and I can do research in Japanese. But I'm not quite the level where I'd sit down and read a novel in Japanese. I think I'm probably still a few years away from that.
And can you watch through a Japanese movie, for example?
Yeah, it's kind of a bit tricky. I'm getting close to that. You know, I'll tend to watch them with the English subtitles still because, you know, it's a learning experience. You know, I'm still a couple of years away from being able to watch a Japanese movie and it be a pleasurable experience rather than a learning experience.
What kind of highlights, what kind of guests did you have in the last couple of months? I remember there was Dan and Ian.
Oh, yeah.
For one.
We had the Godfathers themselves.
Exactly.
Dan and Ian, the founders of Tropical MBA and the Dynamite Circle. Oh, there's been so many people. A DC I met recently called Maché, Alejandro, Jimmy and Doug from Minal, Tynan.net, who we had on the Hobo CEO a couple of years ago. There was Peter Shankman, Jody Ettenberg, Alex Fredheim. I'm sure I'm forgetting a lot of people. Sam Marks, Edmund. It's been such, it's crazy. There's kind of been such a kind of regular flow of people. It's like, you know, when I lived here before, like no one came here. Like most of my friends were from Europe or England at the time. And Japan's a long way from Europe and you don't come to Japan on the way anywhere. So basically no one would come here. It was just like me living in Japan and with, you know, knowing my people that I knew in Japan. So in a sense, it was quite lonely. It was quite isolating. That for me was one of the downsides of being here because it's a very different culture from the West and it's quite introspective. Japan is very Japanese. It's not like London or New York or Berlin, which is very cosmopolitan and international. Japan is, Tokyo is very Japanese. You know, there's not many... foreigners here. the population of foreigners in Japan is like 1.2% or something. You know, most of those people are Asian, Chinese or Korean or from Southeast Asia. So there's, you know, there's very few other foreigners here. So it does feel quite like being on a different planet, really. And, you know, that would feel a bit isolating. You know, I'd be quite cut off from the rest of the world. But now, with all these people passing through, it's great because I've kind of got this regular flow of new people and people who don't live here and aren't kind of Japanized. Because if you behave in the sort of normal way that you would in like Berlin or Barcelona, then, you know, it's quite easy to offend and upset the people around you. You've got to be a little bit more considerate of those around you. So it's like this kind of subtle difference between people who have lived here for a few years and people who've just been, who just turned up.
And I mean, most people that came through, they just stayed for quite short periods of time, right?
So yeah.
Did anybody end up staying for like a month or two? No.
Alex stayed here for a month. Tynan usually stays here for at least a couple of weeks.
Compared to, you know, staying in Berlin, staying in Southeast Asia, Thailand, Vietnam and stuff. What do you do differently? What do you not do? How does your day-to-day life differ?
Okay, let's, you know, the lifestyle in London and Berlin is different. The lifestyle in Barcelona and Berlin is different, but they're, you know, they're generally fairly similar. And so the differences between those types of cities and Tokyo. So probably one of the first things you'll notice is the lack of space. Tokyo is quite a dense city. There's, you know, it's the heaviest populated urban area in the world. There's, I think, 36 million people in the Tokyo metropolitan area. You know, there's not a great deal of space. There's a few parks, but they're generally much smaller than you would find in European cities. Coming with that, there's a lot more kind of rules and regulations. One of the classic things in Berlin, I remember, is the evening grill. You have a barbecue in the park, and there's all these parks where you're allowed to have barbecues. And in Tokyo, there are some parks you can have barbecues, but you have to book your slot like weeks in advance. And it's tricky to just have like a barbecue on your balcony or something because, you know, you're typically very close to your neighbors and they'll complain about the smoke wafting in. So like the kind of density of the city and a lot of the rules and regulations, which, you know, kind of inhibit certain activities. Also, culturally, people tend to be more inhibited as well. There's this real sense of being polite and respectful to those around you. So, you know, people are very orderly. For the most part, they're very quiet and they don't interfere with you. That kind of has the downside of people tend to be more repressed. You know, you don't get people goofing around as much as you do in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Another big thing is it's so safe here. It's not zero crime, but there's very little crime. You can like walk the streets at whatever time, any neighborhood. There's no like dodgy neighborhoods. There's no theft. Hobo co-working in a cafe. You can just leave your laptop there and go off and come back and it will still be there. You can, you know, you lose your wallet, you drop it somewhere and typically it comes back to you because the, you know, somebody who finds it, they figure out who you are and they bring it to you. So there's this great, this high level of safety. So you feel a lot safer being in Tokyo versus being pretty much anywhere else in the rest of the world, including European cities.
Do you take part in any cultural events and stuff? Like, do you see like live music or dance performances, theater, something like that? You know, what regular Tokyoites. Okay.
Tokyoers, Tokyoites, I think is, anyway. So residents of Tokyo, I have been to live gigs. I was in a sort of kite surfing group. I've done some martial arts. I tend more to the kind of social and event time in my life tends to be more concentrated around like the sort of tech and business type things. However, there are a lot of live gigs here. It's, you know, it's a real kind of culturally thriving city. There's a lot of sort of art and music and dance and things. Just the flavors a little bit different. The way people write music, the way people perform art or make art, the way people dance, it's a little bit different. So and what's actually what you would notice the difference coming from Europe would be just, you know, more the way people do it and the way they behave within these situations. Like typically a gig in Europe is, it's a raucous affair. There's drunk people in the audience shouting. Almost anything can happen. Whereas here, it's like much more organized. The bands will start and finish on time. The audience will kind of have a good time, but they won't throw things. It's a lot more well-behaved. And same with things like kind of dance, like Berlin's perhaps an extreme example, but it's stuffed full of all these kind of pseudo hippie, you know, liberated contact improvisation types. That kind of sentiment is quite rare in Tokyo, but it does exist. There are, in fact, there's a couple of contact improvisation groups that I've really been meaning to go and join, and I will go and join them.
Are the Japanese people as much into personal and spiritual development as, for example, Berliners seem to be? I'm just cycling through some of the places in Berlin, the cafes and the bakeries and stuff, and everywhere you see these, you know, workshops. There's a lot of workshops and leg talks and meetings, and
well, Berlin
do all kinds of stuff.
Berlin's off the scale for that kind of stuff, but I'd say generally no. You know, the kind of people are, by and large, they're not very hippie-ish here. And
are they into self-help? I mean, this, you know, the more, let's say, right brain kind of stuff?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Is there a lot of how-to books in Japan and people interested in?
Don't think there's that much self-help. It's more of this sort of family group-oriented culture. So people tend not to focus too much on themselves. Japan is quite behind in its treatment of, you know, psychological and mental disorders. It's very much, if somebody's got, like, you know, say you're depressed or something, the solution is just to smash through it somehow or bottle it up and explode. you don't get the sense that there's this self-discovery, self-help movement here. That's another difference, I'd say.
Okay. And then I realized that every time we talk and stuff, you basically in some cafe, and you mentioned multiple times that basically no day goes by where you don't visit a cafe and hang out there and do some work and stuff. So most cafes have Wi-Fi, or do you use your, how long can you stay in cafes? Like, are they used to people sitting there with laptops and stuff? Is there like a, you know, digital nomad kind of thing similar to what you could experience in a lot of cafes in Berlin, for example?
Good question. The digital hobo work setup. Until recently, Japan's been a real Wi-Fi desert, and it's getting a bit better. I can always tether using my phone, so I've got internet everywhere. But I'd say that nowadays there's quite a lot of cafes which have Wi-Fi. The notable exceptions are the kind of chain cafes. Starbucks is the notable exception. Starbucks has a free Wi-Fi policy, so that's actually a lifesaver, because there's Starbucks everywhere in Tokyo. In terms of like work culture, you do get a few people on laptops in cafes. There doesn't seem to be any restriction with just being sat there for hours doing work. As long as you've ordered a drink, you know, you're not going to turn up and not order a drink, but that's kind of the same anywhere, really. So, you know, it's getting closer to the situation that I've seen in lots of other European cities and Southeast Asian cities. But it's, you know, it's not quite there yet. There's a certain amount of people on laptops, and there's a certain amount of free Wi-Fi. You know, if you live here like I do, or if you just look at Tokyo Cheapo, you can find a map of places where there's good coffee and good Wi-Fi fairly easily.
And let's talk food a little bit. I mean, I totally envy you for having the good fish and sushi, which probably everybody thinks you should find in Tokyo plenty of. You have your own, you know, your own pickiness about food, your own likes and dislikes and things you prefer. But what kind of range can you expect when you're living in Tokyo?
Firstly, I'd say that's one of the best things about Tokyo, just off the scale culinary delight. Firstly, all the Japanese food is amazing. Sushi is like nothing else on this planet. The Japanese food is really well prepared, attention to detail, presentation as well. It's like this delightful dining experience. Moreover, there's lots of good cuisine from other countries as well. I particularly like the French restaurants here in Tokyo. You know, the chefs here, they really kind of want to do the best. It's about really getting the best plate of food in front of the customer that they possibly can. From the low end to the high end places, it's really, the bar is so high. you really don't need to spend a lot of money in Tokyo to have a really awesome meal. Yeah, so in general, it's really good. More specifically, if you're like me and you want to eat healthy and organic, it gets a bit expensive. Generally, if I eat at restaurants, then I'm not going to be having some local organic farm food in front of me. It's going to be like the Japanese food, like sushi or something. There are kind of outlets for getting organic foods and whatnot, but it's a little bit expensive, especially compared to Europe. The other thing is it's quite difficult to make a lot of European foods because basically you don't come to Asia for dairy. There's very limited options for dairy. You know, there's not many cheese varieties here. The milk's, it's okay. It's not that bad in Japan, but basically if you live here long term and you've grown up in the West, you will probably miss certain Western culinary experiences. Although, you know, you still can get cheese here, you still can get wine here or whatever. It's not as abundant as it is in Europe. My favorite pet peeve is berries. Until I recently found that you can buy frozen raspberries and blueberries. The first thing I'd do when I get back to Europe was just like stuff my face on strawberries and blackberries and blueberries.
Okay. And what kind of Japanese specialties do you particularly enjoy that are not, you know, accessible outside of Japan?
Christ, there's so many. The first thing you need to know about Japanese cuisine is there's so much more to it than just sushi and tempura or noodles. It's such a vast gamut. It's a bit like French cuisine plus Italian cuisine or something. There's all this, you know, there's all these winter hot pots, there's fried chicken, there's fried beef, there's steaks, there's all these ways of preparing vegetables, there's all these different types of noodles, there's tempura, there's sushi, sashimi. You know, there's a really wide variety of Japanese cuisine, and typically when you're overseas you'll see sushi, maybe you'll see tempura, maybe you'll see noodles, but a lot of my favorites you don't really see overseas. So yeah, I'll miss a lot of stuff when I'm not in Japan.
One thing that always bothers me when I travel around is the difference in how, you know, shops are open and stuff. In Berlin, for example, you basically have almost 24-hour access to beverages and basic food items. And, you know, supermarkets are open fairly most of it, 10 at night or whatever, some of them even 24/7. And then Southeast Asia, there's some holidays where shops are closed, some of them, but for the most part, everything is open all the time, it seems. And what is that like in Japan? How strict are they with opening hours? And
you know what you're forgetting? Sundays. Everything fucking closes in Germany on Sundays.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but at least in Germany, you can get, if you're in Berlin, you can get, or the bigger cities, you can get, you know, you can go to a bakery and there's
Anyway.
The late night shops and stuff. But yeah.
I remember getting caught out by that when I went to Berlin. So yeah, let me get back to your question. So in Japan and in Tokyo, there's a lot of stuff which is open 24/7. You've got convenience stores everywhere, and they're always 24/7, 365 days a year. There's quite a lot of entertainment establishments which are open till the early hours. There's not so many supermarkets which are open beyond 10 p.m., 11 p.m. Regular supermarkets and shops tend to open quite late in the day. Often they won't open till 10 a.m. You can basically get stuff from a convenience store at any time of day. But to do a lot of your regular shopping, it typically starts later in the day, like 10 a.m. And generally shops open quite late. You know, at the earliest, they'll close at 8 p.m. And often they're open till 10, 11 p.m. And then you've got a handful of shops opening 24 hour, plus a lot of entertainment establishments opening late.
That sounds pretty good. How much do you hang out with Japanese people? And what's that like?
This is a great question. Sadly, I don't hang out that much with Japanese people. When I first came here, I really tried hard to fully integrate and sort of actively avoided making many foreign friends. I had sort of two, loosely it was in two groups of friends, which were Japanese. at the time, my Japanese wasn't anything like as good as it was now. So that limited it a bit. But the main problem was everybody's so damn busy. Basically, the work-life balance here is appalling. As soon as somebody gets a proper corporate job, you know, you can forget about meeting them. It's like you've literally, they have only a little bit of free time at the weekends, which they're going to be quite tired, and often they'll probably, you know, be visiting their family and relatives. It's typified by the classic situation. I would like say to one of my friends, hey, how about hanging out this weekend? And the reply would be, oh, I'm a bit busy this weekend. How about in August, which would be 2 months later? So wow. That made it quite tricky, the fact that everybody's so busy, much more so than you would find in like London or something. But then you've also got like cultural differences and language differences. Typically, people don't speak English very well here. If you can't speak really good Japanese, it does really cut down the number of people you can have a meaningful relationship with. The way people socialize is quite different as well. It's people are much more restrained. They don't talk so openly and frankly, and it takes quite a while for people to sort of open up and trust you. And, you know, as I said, you know, there's not that many foreigners here. So being from the West, you're quite different and unusual. And there's this very kind of Japanese way of socializing, which doesn't, you smash a bit into Japanese sensibilities. The net result of this was after 2 years of trying very hard to socialize, I got a bit frustrated, and I went to a few tech events, which were, there was quite a few other foreigners there, you know, Americans, Australians, Germans, Europeans, whatnot. And it was just like popping a balloon and all this kind of pent up frustration spilling out. And I just found it so much easier to socialize with other foreigners here, because you've got no language differences. You've got much more in common. It's a bit sad, really. It's like living in Germany, or well, Berlin, at least, you know, this problem just didn't exist. Like I would be indiscriminately hanging out with whoever from whatever nationality, whether they were Germans or whether they were French or Italian or Australian. But here it's very much, you know, there's this kind of very hard divide between like the social interactions with local Japanese and the rest of the community, foreigners.
And since you mentioned that most people don't speak good English in Japan, what second or maybe even third language do they learn in school then?
They learn English.
Okay.
Okay. Japan has this appalling standard of English speaking. It's quite tragic, really, despite it being, you know, previously the second, now the third largest GDP developed country in the world. And, you know, the rigorous English language education everyone goes through, it's quite tragic how ill-equipped people here are at actually speaking English in a practical sense. You know, you compare it with like the Philippines or even Thailand, you know. I mean, the Philippines, people are excellent English across the board. But I typically, the average Thai person, you'll probably get further speaking to them in English than you would the average person in Japan.
But you're saying it's not a lack of willingness. It's just...
it's a poor education system. It's basically... Okay. It's basically around, you know, scoring well in tests. It's not based on actually being able to communicate.
So to sum up a little bit, you're not intentionally placed yourself in Tokyo because of how many people would come through and so on and so forth. It really was, from that perspective, a good decision. As you said, you seem way less lonely, because I also remember, like, before you left, I think you were not really expecting this. So as you pointed at in the beginning, there's really a kind of like a recipe for doing something like that. How do you consider the chances to pulling that off intentionally?
Well, let's talk about the conditions here. I'm not sure if it's a recipe, because, you know, countries aren't generic. They all have their own different conditions. But the conditions are, this is a thoroughfare. Lots of Americans pass through Tokyo on their way to Asia. So that's one thing. The other thing is there's not many other people in my position. So that means it's actually quite likely that you're going to meet me if you're in my network and you're passing through Tokyo. So I guess those are the two basic conditions. You know, there might be other countries, other situations where that applies, but maybe it's just Tokyo.
It is fairly attractive. A lot of people want to go there. It still has the mystery. So it's kind of like I'm looking forward to visit Japan at a time when you are there and having you as a go-to person and be my easy access to that instead of, you know, having to figure out all that stuff by myself and not speaking the language. And that would be probably hard and expensive. And I don't only mean expensive in, you know, monetary terms, but expensive in, it's a lot of effort, a lot of uncertainty and all that kind of like drags on you, you know?
So let me wrap up with my kind of thoughts on Tokyo as a digital hobo destination. It's quite likely Tokyo will become more and more attractive as a digital hobo destination. Straight off the bat, it's a really nice place to live. It's super safe, super convenient. It's a developed country, everything works. It's a really comfortable place to live. A lot of people come here and kind of get stuck here because it's so nice and comfortable.
Yeah, let me quickly interrupt you. Do you generally feel welcome? Do you feel welcome as a foreigner in Tokyo?
Yes and no. Japanese are very welcoming to guests, but they're not so welcoming to foreigners on a long-term basis. As I've said before, Japan is, there's very few foreigners here. So being foreign is quite a new novel thing. So it's probably, it's probably a bit like being in a European country like 100 years ago or something where it was much more homogenous. On the back of that, people tend to be more suspicious of foreigners and there's, you know, certain doors which will be closed, which wouldn't be closed, which would be illegal to close in other countries. You don't come here to sort of have this fully integrated experience with Japanese people. I think that's still a few generations away, to be honest. You come here and have this sort of one foot in, one foot out type of life. If you're okay with that, then Tokyo is a really cool place.
Okay.
Back to the digital hobo thing. So it's a really comfortable place to live, number one. Number two, it's actually quite cheap here. You know, it's got this false reputation as being the most expensive city in the world, which it might have been in the 80s, and it certainly was quite expensive just after the recent financial crisis when the yen was extremely strong. But, you know, now the yen is a lot weaker, and my monthly expenses in Tokyo aren't that much more than they were in Berlin, and they're quite a lot less than they were in London. So it's actually quite a cheap place to live. I think it's a very good value place to live, what you get for your money. You know, I've got like a flat with an amazing view in central Tokyo. I'm like a few minutes walk from really the center of centers. And, you know, my cost of living for that in London would be two times what I'm paying now, maybe three times. So, so it's actually quite cheap. Digital hobo wise, you're generally not too concerned about the place you're in for doing business. So it's not such a problem. Like, you know, most people who are hoboing around, their income and their business interest isn't necessarily where they're located. I would discourage people from coming here to do business because it's not an easy place to do business at all. It's certainly improving, but very slowly. The final thing I'd say is I think Japan is going to continue to get cheaper, and I imagine it's going to have more and more facilities that are foreigner friendly, especially for tourists. And I could imagine, you know, like in 10 years time, it's going to be more like an experience you'd get going to other Southeast Asian countries, except it will be much cleaner, much more pleasant. Everyone's really, you know, polite, and there's a good chance it might go higher in the rankings of digital hobo hotspots.
Sounds fair. Good. Thank you for providing so much insider knowledge, value bomb to the Hobo CEO podcast. I think that's about all I wanted to I wanted to ask you surrounding the subject, and we have not yet touched too much into you being in Japan and also doing some business there, you know, with a Tokyo Cheapo, but I think that's just a teaser for an upcoming episode.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nico.
And to all the nice listeners out there, see and hear you next time.
Yeah, catch you later, guys. Goodbye.
Morality, morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and superheroes.
Another amazing podcast magic production.